Give him seconds to press the button.
Yeah, great. Mufid is a man of many talents, so we have to give him a chance to go back and do the translating. Now, he told me that normally here in Lebanon, the preacher wears a jacket, yes? That's sort of like the uniform. I'm sorry, I don't have a jacket, but I have a nice tie. That's my American equivalent of dressing like a preacher, okay? Okay, good. All right, so this morning I'm going to talk about Jesus. You know, I love talking about Jesus. You know, I really appreciated the talk I was able to do on Friday and Saturday night, but really, this is my favorite by far. What greater topic can we have as Christians have to talk about than Jesus? So I want to talk about who Jesus said he was and why we should believe in Jesus. You know, there are many ideas about Jesus. People say different things about him. You know, I appreciate that you in the church here live in a country where not everybody accepts Jesus to be who we believe he is. Some people say that Jesus was a sage. That would be a wise person, a philosopher. Other people say that Jesus was a prophet. Still others say he was a liar and a deceiver. Some people say he was crazy. Others say Messiah, the anointed one of God. Still others say the Son of Man. That's an interesting title. Some would say that he's God in the flesh. Others would say that he's really just a legend, a myth. Really, some people say that it's not even true, the stories that are made up about him. Some people say he is merely a man. You know, the most common idea about Jesus is the last one on the list there, is that he was just one religious leader amongst many great religious leaders. And the thing is, Jesus can't be all these things. For example, if he was a liar, then he's certainly not the Messiah. And if he was merely a man, then he's certainly not God in the flesh. So here's the question I want to put out there for you. Who do you believe that Jesus is? You know, there are other religious leaders that have had claims. Some people say there are many different ways to get to God. Some people say through Muhammad, through Krishna, through Joseph Smith, through other religious leaders, Confucius or Buddha. What did the other religious leaders say? For example, Confucius. You've heard of Confucius. What did Confucius say about himself? What he said about himself was that he was a very wise man. Do you believe Confucius was a wise man? I do. I think he was a very wise man. I think he was wiser than most of us in this room. What did Joseph Smith say about himself? Maybe you've heard of Joseph Smith. He claimed that God spoke to him directly and that he was a prophet. Now, we could ask whether his character agrees with those claims, but he claimed to be a spokesperson for God. There are other great leaders. For example, Baha'u'llah, who claimed to be the final and greatest prophet. Did Baha'u'llah claim to work miracles? No, he did not. Then there's Moses. What did Moses claim about himself? Moses claimed, similar to Muhammad, and similar to Joseph Smith, actually, Moses claimed that God spoke to him directly and that he was a prophet. What did Buddha claim about himself? Buddha claimed to be a wise person who found a wise way to understand and know God. Do you think Buddha was a wise person? You know, everything I read about Buddha, I actually like him. His eightfold way to enlightenment, right thinking, right life. These seem to be good ideas to me. Did Buddha claim to work miracles? No. Did he claim to be a prophet? No. What about Jesus? You know, we're going to look at the claims of Jesus, and Jesus is in a class completely by himself. There is no one who even approaches making the claims that Jesus made. What about Muhammad? Muhammad claimed to be a prophet, and he claimed that God spoke to him through Jibril, the angel. Did Muhammad claim to work miracles? No, he did not. What about Jesus? You know, I believe that if we look at the claims of Jesus, we'll have to conclude either he was crazy or a liar, or the things he said about himself are true. Really, crazy, a liar, or the things he said about himself were true. Jesus is not merely a good person. Jesus is not merely a sage. In fact, if what Jesus claimed about himself is not true, then Jesus was not even a good person. Let me say that again. If what Jesus claimed about himself is not true, then he wasn't even a good person. And if what Jesus claimed about himself is true, then the idea that he's just one of many religious leaders taking us more or less to the same place doesn't make any sense at all. So let's consider what Jesus said about himself. In John 5:39, Jesus was speaking to the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, and he said to them about the scriptures, he said, "These scriptures were written about me." Imagine. Let's imagine, for example, that I stood in front of you today and I said, "The whole Old Testament was written about me." How would you respond to that? Very funny. Thank you for telling us the joke. No one could take that seriously, right? But what if instead I said, "No, I'm serious. I'm not kidding. The whole Old Testament was written about me." Then how would you respond? "This guy's crazy." But that's what Jesus said. Jesus said the entire Old Testament was testifying and teaching about me. That's what he said in John 5:39. You know, Jesus said some other things. Let's go to John chapter 6, verse 48. John chapter 6, verse 48. Jesus is not one of many religious leaders. Jesus is the only one. John 6:48. Jesus said, "I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, yet they died. But here is the bread that comes down from heaven, which anyone may eat and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Whoever eats this bread will live forever. This bread is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world." Jesus said, "If you feed on me, I will give you eternal life." Did any religious leader ever say anything even remotely like this? Did Moses say something like this? Did Buddha say something like this? Did Muhammad say something like this? Imagine a human being saying, "I am the bread of life. And if you feed upon me, I will give you eternal life." But that's what Jesus said. Let's go to John 8:46. One thing we want to look at as we read these things is the response of the people. Because I believe the response to Jesus today by most people doesn't really fit with the claims of Jesus. Because if we accept the claims of Jesus, then we should bow to him as Lord and give him everything. Or if we don't accept his claims, then we should treat him as an enemy, and Christianity is a very bad religion. That's a strong statement, but I believe that's consistent with what Jesus said about himself. John chapter 8, verse 46. John chapter 8, verse 46. Now, Jesus is talking about the many miracles he worked. I'll go back to verse 45. Yet because I tell the truth, you do not believe me. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I'm telling the truth, why don't you believe me? Whoever belongs to God hears what God says. The reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God. Jesus said to a crowd of people, many of whom had known him for many, many years, he said, can anyone prove me guilty of sin? Let's imagine, for example, we get Mufid up here this morning, and Mufid says, can anyone prove me guilty of sin? And then Jessie will raise her hand right away and say, yes, 500 times in the last week. Imagine any human being saying, can anyone prove me guilty of sin? And I imagine the people there in the crowd thinking, well, there was that one time. Oh, wait a minute. No. Scratching their head, trying to imagine if he ever sinned. And look at their response in verse 48. The Jews answered him, aren't we right in saying you're Samaritan and demon-possessed? Now, there's nobody said, well, wait a minute, Jesus. What about the time you lost your temper over here? Wait a minute, Jesus. What about the time you looked lustfully at this woman? See, nobody could mention any sin he committed. So what did they say? He's crazy. That was the only response they could come up with. He's crazy. But you know what? Jesus was not crazy. Crazy people do certain things, and Jesus did not do those things. Jesus claimed to be without sin, to live a perfect life. Has anybody ever claimed that? Well, sure. Crazy people. And Jesus. Now let's look at John 8, verse 58. Just go across the page a little bit. Jesus here is talking about Abraham, and they're challenging him on his authority to make these statements that he's making. In verse 57, well, actually, let's go back to verse 56. Your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad. They said to him, you are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham? Very truly I tell you, Jesus answered, before Abraham was born, I am. What did God say to Moses when Moses asked him who to say sent him? I am. Jesus said, I am. I am the pre-existent one. Jesus said, I am God. Did anyone ever make a claim like that? Can we compare Jesus to any other religious leader? It makes no sense. How can you compare Jesus to Buddha or Confucius or Lao Tzu? There's no comparison. Jesus said, before Abraham was born, I am. Now, the way I see it, either Jesus is God or he's not. In which case, he's an arrogant liar or a crazy person, but certainly not a good religious leader. You can't have it both ways. And if he is God, the question is, how will you respond to him? Look at the response they had here. At this, they picked up stones to stone him. Why do they pick up stones to stone him? Because he said that he was God. And I would say, given what Jesus said about himself, stoning him makes sense if you don't believe it's true. But then you have to explain his miracles and all those other things. Or making him Lord. And the fact that people say, I'm a Christian, and you know, I don't go to church too often, but I read my Bible sometimes, and you know, Jesus, 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 but my life does not agree with that. That response, so typical, doesn't make any sense at all. Let's go to John chapter 8, verse 39, I think it is. We'll find out when we get there. John chapter 10. Verse 37, we'll start there. Do not believe me because I do the works of my Father, unless I do the works of my Father. But if I do them, even though you do not believe me, believe the works, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I am in the Father. He said, I and the Father are one. Okay. Jesus said, I and the Father are one. Now, I suppose that could have two different interpretations. One interpretation would be, you know, me and God, we're really close. Another interpretation would be, I am God. Well, let's see their response here. Again, they tried to pick up, tried to seize him, but he escaped their grasp. Okay, let me see. Verse 30. I was reading the wrong verse. Let me see. Could I have this put on a stand like that one so I could see it? I don't have any notes, so I'm working off the computer. That would be great. By the way, she is such a great servant. I'm sorry, what is your name? Yola. She is a wonderful servant, and I'd appreciate it if I could see that. All right, great. So, by the way, the one I read, that was really good. But let's go back to John 10, verse 30, okay? Thank you very much. No, I'm thinking that. No, see that platform there? Okay. All for the camera. Oh, that would be really great. Just right there. I bet it won't block the camera. Thank you so much. I'm getting old. You know, I'm 63. Perfect. All right, let's read John 10, verse 29 and 30. My Father has given them to me, is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my hand. I and the Father are one. Again, his Jewish opponents picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus said to them, I have shown you many good works for the Father. For which of these do you stone me? They said, we are not stoning you for any good work, but for blasphemy, because you, a mere man, claim to be God. And then Jesus says, no, you misunderstand. I'm not claiming to be God. I'm just claiming to be, you know, close to God. No, that's not what he said. Jesus claimed to be the very God of creation. Imagine that. You know, Jesus made a number of other claims, some of which will be on the screen when my notes come back up again. Let's go to John chapter 14. John chapter 14. Okay, great. I'm sorry, John chapter 11. Now we're all together here. John chapter 11, 21 through 29. Great. Now, the scene here is very interesting. Lazarus has died. And I get the sense from reading the New Testament that probably Lazarus, Mary, and Martha were closer friends of Jesus, perhaps even than some of the apostles. That's how close they were to Jesus. Now, Jesus is not far away, and they ask him to come. Jesus had raised Jairus' daughter. Jesus had raised other people from the dead. He'd healed thousands, so they thought, surely he'll come here to heal Lazarus, one of his best friends. But Jesus delays. He waits a few days. It's been 4 days, and Jesus comes into the city of Bethany there. Let's read what happened, starting in verse 21. John 11, starting in verse 21. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though he dies. Whoever lives by believing me will never die. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus said, if you believe in me, you will live even though you die. Did anybody else ever make a claim like this? Can we compare Jesus to any other man who ever lived? We can compare him, but really, there's no comparison. Now, Jesus had a habit of working miracles that proved his claims. What did he do right before he said, I'm the bread of life? He made enough bread to feed 5,000 men, probably over 10,000 people. What did Jesus do right after he said, I am the resurrection and the life? Well, let's go across the page. Verse 38 of John 11. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you'll see the glory of God? So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank that you have heard me. I know you always hear me, but I say this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Then Jesus said to him, take off his grave clothes and let him go. Jesus said, I'm the resurrection and the life. He says, whoever believes in me will live even though he dies. And what did he do? He said, Lazarus, come out. Dead 4 days. Do you have any idea what a human body is like after being dead for 4 days? They said to him, Jesus, don't you realize the smell? And Lazarus walked out. I love what it says right after that. Verse 45, it says, therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and Martha and see what Jesus did believed in him. I would think so. I would think that if you saw Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead after 4 days, I would think you might believe in him. But there was another group. If you read farther down, they said they went back and they plotted to kill him. Why did they plot to kill Jesus? Was it because they didn't believe that he raised Lazarus? No. It's because they did believe that he raised Lazarus. And they said, he is a dangerous man. If you're not willing to submit to Jesus, then for you, he's a dangerous man. If you're not willing to be a Christian, then for you, the one who lived a perfect life, who said he was God, who said he is the bread of life, he is the fulfillment of the Old Testament, he is the resurrection and life, then for you, perhaps he would be a dangerous man. But one thing I know is, Jesus is not just some other religious leader. That makes no sense whatsoever. You know, people said he was insane. In fact, even his family said, you know, Jesus, you're acting a little crazy. Anybody who would say to the Jewish leaders, you're a brood of vipers and whitewashed tombs, some people might say that's a little crazy. But Jesus was not a crazy man. Jesus lived a perfect life. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the evidence. Now, we could talk about raising Lazarus. We could talk about feeding 5,000. But let's talk about some of the other evidence for Jesus. Let's go to Luke 24, verse 44. Luke chapter 24, verse 44. Jesus made some pretty amazing statements. Would that be fair to say? Did anybody ever say the things that Jesus said unless they're obviously a crazy person? No. None. No comparison. No one, even remotely, like Jesus. Let's look at another claim of Jesus. It's in Luke 24, verse 44. He said this about himself. He said to them, "This is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms." And the Jewish Bible is divided into the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms. And Jesus said, "I am fulfilling all the prophecies in the Old Testament." Let's look at some of the prophecies of the Old Testament. Now, some people would say, you know, how do I know that these things were actually written before the lifetime of Jesus? That maybe a skeptic would say that. But one thing we have is the Dead Sea. Oh, okay. Let's go to the next one. The Dead Sea Scrolls. We have the book of Isaiah, three copies of Isaiah, one from 150 years B.C. The other thing we have is the Septuagint translation. In other words, the whole Old Testament was translated into Greek 250 years before Christ. So all these prophecies are from hundreds of years before Christ. Somebody else might say, there, by the way, is the Isaiah scroll from Qumran, from the Dead Sea Scrolls. Proof positive beyond any possible doubt that these prophecies were written hundreds of years before Jesus' life. Another question people might ask is, you know, how do we know these things really happened? Maybe the apostles just made them up. But we have the testimony of historians who were not even Christians. For example, Josephus, a Jewish historian who did not accept Jesus. I won't take time to read all these quotes, but Josephus said that Jesus was a great man who worked miracles and who was killed under Pontius Pilate by crucifixion. We have Tacitus, who said also that Jesus was killed under Tiberius by crucifixion, and that many people were still following him to that very day. And even the Jewish Talmud, which is accepted by the Jews as part of the scripture, says, yes, this man Jesus was crucified. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at prophecies that are a matter of historical record. Things that there's no question about it, that Jesus did these things. Another person might say, well, how do I know these prophecies are actually about the Messiah? Maybe what Jesus did, maybe he read, I don't know, for example, in Zechariah 9, where it says the Messiah rides into Jerusalem on a donkey. Jesus says, all right, I want to claim to be the Messiah, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to rent a donkey, and I'm going to ride on him into Jerusalem. I suppose. But what we're going to see is many of these prophecies were out of the control of Jesus. He couldn't have fulfilled them even if he wanted to. All right? So, let's look at some of these. Isaiah 53. This prophecy was written more than 700 years before Jesus was born. I think a lot of you are familiar with Isaiah 53. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot, like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by mankind, a man of suffering, familiar with pain, like one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him, and by his wounds we are healed. Now, is this a prophecy of the Messiah? Absolutely. Even the Jews before Jesus said, this is a prophecy concerning our Messiah. What does it say about the Messiah? It said he will be despised and rejected. Now here's a question. Was Jesus despised and rejected? Yes. Is that a matter of historical record? You don't need to be a Christian to know that. Yes. Could Jesus, wanting to claim to be the Messiah, have arranged to be despised and rejected? Sure he could have. If you go in front of the Pharisees and call them a brood of vipers and a bunch of whitewashed tombs, do you think you might possibly get despised and rejected? Yeah, Jesus said a few things. So you, if you wanted to, you could argue that maybe he's trying to set himself up to be the Messiah. Now, we all know that doesn't really make much sense, right? But there's another prophecy which says he will be pierced. You know what happened to Jesus on the cross, right? He was crucified, of course, and because he'd been so severely flogged, nearly to the point of death, he died relatively early in the crucifixion, within only a few hours. And his body was hanging limp on the cross. It was the evening before the Passover, and it was blasphemy to the Jews to have a crucifixion going on the Passover. So they broke the legs of the two thieves, because if you do that, that causes somebody to suffocate and die within a few minutes. They come to Jesus, and they did not break any of his bones, which was prophesied in Psalm 22 and elsewhere. And instead, they put a spear up into his side. Now, if you want to be claimed to be the Messiah, you have to get pierced with a spear. Was Jesus pierced with a spear? Yes. Could he have arranged this? I suppose so. He's on the cross. Hey, guys, you're killing me. But, you know, please do me a favor, all right? After I die, just, you know, it's not a big deal. Would you please do me a favor and pierce me in the side? That's ridiculous. Jesus fulfilled this prophecy. There are so many other prophecies that Jesus fulfilled. All right? What about the one in Micah 5, verse 2? This also was written more than 700 years before Christ. That's a long time. If you don't know where Micah is, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah. I'm right after Jonah. All right. I taught Sunday school for many years, so we memorized all the minor prophets. Micah chapter 5, verse 2. It says, "But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you're small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times." Oh, this is definitely a prophecy of the Messiah. The Jews had always said this is a prophecy of the Messiah. Where must the Messiah be born? In Bethlehem. There are two Bethlehems in Israel. The smaller one is Bethlehem Ephrathah. So where was Jesus born? Bethlehem Ephrathah. That is a matter of historical fact. Could Jesus have arranged to be born in Bethlehem Ephrathah? Well, sure, if he's God. You know, if you want to be qualified to be the Messiah, definitely no one here in this room is qualified. Nobody here has been pierced. A few of us have been despised and rejected. You know, a few of us have that going for us. Was anybody here born in Bethlehem? And then there's Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1. Remember, Jesus said, all the statements about the Messiah must be fulfilled in me. And if you want to claim to be the Messiah, if you want to claim to have fulfilled these prophecies, there's a really big problem with that, because it means you get killed. It means you get tortured. It means you get despised and rejected. Isaiah 9, verse 1. All right, great. Here it says, "Nevertheless, there'll be no more gloom for those who are in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles by way of the sea beyond the Jordan." Now, in order to see that this is a messianic prophecy, let's skip down to verse 6. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. He'll be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. This is certainly a messianic prophecy. Now, probably, I'm guessing, not all everyone here knows where Zebulun and Naphtali are. Let me show you where Zebulun and Naphtali are. Okay? Now, here is Zebulun, and here is Naphtali. All right, see that? Now, let me go to the next slide. Look where Nazareth is. Nazareth is right on the border between Zebulun and Naphtali. You know, they said to Jesus, no prophet could ever come from Galilee. Guess who they forgot? They forgot Jonah, who came from Gath-Hepher, which is about 2 kilometers from Nazareth. Jesus, in order to be the Messiah, you have to get born in Bethlehem, and yet you have to be raised in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali, right near Nazareth. Could Jesus have arranged that one? I don't think so. Is it a matter of historical record that he came from Nazareth? Yes, what did they call the early church? They called them Nazarenes. All right? How about Psalm 22, 16 through 18? Psalm 22, 16 through 18. You know, at some point, the fact that Jesus is the Messiah, that he is the one prophesied by the Old Testament, becomes rather clear, don't you think? I think so. Psalm 22, starting in verse 16. Now, as we read this, imagine David writing this down. Just imagine David writing this down and thinking, this is really weird that I just wrote this down. David said, dogs surround me, a pack of villains encircles me. They have pierced my hands and my feet. All my bones are on display. People stare and gloat over me. They divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. Again, David, imagine David writing this down. They've pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They divided my garments. And imagine writing down saying, wow, why did I just write that down? Can you think of anyone who was despised and rejected, who was pierced, who was born in Bethlehem but raised in Nazareth, who also was crucified? Is it a historical fact that Jesus was crucified? Yes, Roman historians, Jewish historians. Could Jesus have arranged to be crucified? That's actually hard. Because the Jews did not have the power to crucify. In order for him to be crucified, he had to be executed by the Romans. And why would the Romans want to kill him? Did you know that when David lived, crucifixion had not even been invented? Crucifixion was not invented until roughly 300 BC. And crucifixion by piercing of hands and feet was created by the Romans 100 BC, 900 years after David wrote this down. You know what? I think Jesus is the Son of God. I think he's God in the flesh. I think he fulfilled the prophecies. I think he's Messiah. It also said, I can count all my bones, which is talking about the fact that his bones weren't broken. And it says, they divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. Now you can read John chapter 19, and the question is, did they divide his garments or did they gamble for them? The answer is, they did both. They said, one for you, one for you, one for me. But when they came to that inner garment, it was very valuable. So they gambled over it. Could Jesus have arranged that? Well, I guess he could have. Hey guys, that inner garment, that's very valuable. I think you should probably gamble over that. That's ridiculous. Two more prophecies. By the way, there are dozens more. How about Zechariah 11, verse 12 and 13? Zechariah 11, verses 12 and 13. This was written 520 years before Christ. That's a long time. By the way, Zechariah is easy to find. It's right before the New Testament. All right? Zechariah 11, verse 12 and 13. I told them, if you think it best, give me my pay. But if not, keep it. So they paid me 30 pieces of silver. And the Lord said to me, throw it to the potter, the handsome price at which they priced me. So I took the 30 pieces of silver, I threw them into the Lord, threw them to the potter at the house of the Lord. Now, remind me. How many pieces of silver did they give Judas to betray Jesus? 30. Are you sure it's 30? How do we know it's 30? Well, because the New Testament writers wrote that. But if it wasn't true, they certainly wouldn't have written it, because everybody would have known what he was betrayed for. How many pieces? 30 pieces. I like to imagine those Jewish leaders reading Zechariah a few months later and going, man, I wish we'd give him 100 pieces of silver. Could Jesus have arranged to be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver? I don't think he was in the room. You know what? I think Jesus is the Messiah. In fact, if anybody does not believe Jesus is the Messiah, what do they have to say about these prophecies? How could you respond to this? How could anybody deny that Jesus is the Messiah? How could they? I guess they have to ignore these passages. And by the way, what happened to those 30 pieces of silver? Judas came back, threw them into the ground, and they said that we can't accept that money, and they bought the potter's field. Just like that prophecy. One more prophecy. As if this is not enough. One more, Daniel chapter 9. This is my favorite one of all, okay? So indulge me, please, while we look at one more prophecy. Daniel chapter 9, verse 24. 70 sevens are decreed for your people in your holy city to finish transgression, to put an end to sin, to atone for wickedness, to bring in everlasting righteousness, to seal up vision and prophecy, and to anoint the most holy place. Know and understand this, from the time the word goes out to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, until the anointed one, the ruler, comes, there'll be seven sevens and 62 sevens, rebuilt with streets in a trench, but in times of trouble. Is this a prophecy about the Messiah? Absolutely. It's saying that the anointed one, Messiah, the Hebrew word Messiah means the anointed one. It says the anointed one is going to come to Jerusalem. He's going to put an end to sin. He's going to atone for wickedness and bring in everlasting righteousness. He has 70 sevens. Now, if you go earlier in Daniel chapter 9, it's talking about years, 70 years. So this is 490 years. Now, was there ever a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem? And the answer is yes. You know where it is? It's in Ezra chapter 7. It was issued in the seventh year of Artaxerxes. We're going to have a quiz after church, all right? You're going to have to tell us it was the seventh year of Artaxerxes in Ezra chapter 7, all right? If you don't, you know, look it up the notes, go to my website, find the details, okay? And there's a book about that in back there. You know, there's a book you can read about that, okay? Daniel, there's a book on Daniel. Get a copy. Well, it turns out the seventh year of Artaxerxes was the year 458 B.C. We know that from records. Now, let's subtract 490 from 438. You know what year that is? 32 A.D. No. It's not 32 A.D. because there is no year zero. The calendar goes from 1 B.C. to 1 A.D. So Daniel was told by the angel here that the Messiah is going to come to Jerusalem in roughly the year 33 A.D. to bring in everlasting righteousness, to atone for wickedness, and to end vision and prophecy. So, if anybody wants to claim to be the Messiah, they have to be born in Bethlehem, raised in the region of Zebulun and Naphtali, somewhere near Nazareth. They have to be despised and rejected. They have to be pierced and crucified, betrayed for 30 pieces of silver, have none of their bones broken, have their garments divided and gambled over, and they have to come to Jerusalem roughly in the year 33 AD to make atonement for sin. You know what? I only see one possible response to this. Jesus is who he says he is. He is God in the flesh. He is the bread of life, who if we feed upon him, we will have eternal life. He is the sinless one. He is the resurrection and the life. And if we believe in him, we will live even though we die. Who is Jesus? He is all those things. The evidence is beyond debate. Look at those prophecies written hundreds of years before, fulfilled as a matter of historical record, and certainly not something Jesus could have manipulated. Besides, if he wanted to, that would have been a really bad idea because it means he gets himself killed. Now, I've used up my time. I think I've been speaking long enough. I wanted to spend time talking about the resurrection. That's the greatest miracle of all. Let me give you the 3-minute version, and I'm not going to use my PowerPoint, okay? There are a few facts. Fact number one, Jesus was crucified by the Romans in Jerusalem. That is a fact that no one who is honest can deny. Fact number two, his resurrection was declared and believed in Jerusalem within days by thousands of people. That's a fact that even the hardened skeptic cannot deny. Fact number three, his tomb was empty. Because one thing I can say for sure, if his tomb was not empty, there would not have been thousands of believers in the resurrection. Oh, he was crucified. And his tomb was empty. And the resurrection was proclaimed in Jerusalem, in front of tens of thousands. And no one said, oh, wait a minute, we have his body. People say, well, he didn't really die. Okay. Beaten nearly to the point of death, crucified, hanging lifeless from the cross, and then given a mortal wound with a spear, and then he kind of comes to, moves the massive stone and punches all those guards, gives them a little karate kick, and walks out free. If you believe that, I don't know about you. Other people say, well, you know, they stole his body. Well, who would steal his body? All right, would the apostles steal his body? Why would they do that? So they could have this big lie and be hounded to death for the rest of their life over a lie? Besides, how would these apostles kind of kill all these soldiers and nobody would notice that? Nobody would notice the dead bodies the next day. You know what? The reason that his tomb was empty, and the reason, as Paul said, more than 500 eyewitnesses saw him alive, is because he was raised from the dead. So what is your response to Jesus? Who do you say Jesus is? Here's what Jesus said he is. He is the sinless Son of God, the resurrection and the life. He is the I Am. Can we compare Jesus to any other religious leader? It makes no sense. There is no one like Jesus. There is no prophet like Jesus. Jesus is the Son of God. So what should our response be? I think the only possible response that makes any sense is to say, you are Lord. To repent of our sins and to be baptized into Christ. And I pray for those of you not done that yet, I pray that you'll do that very soon. Because if you do, if you put your faith in Him, you will live even though you die. Thank you.